Now let me bring on Eric Bischoff here.
About damn time. We got to crush all this hoopla about positivity and yoga. We need some dirt. We need some muck. We need to bury some MFers here. Come on, let's play.
Hey, EB. How are you, bro?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good.
Well, Eric, thanks for joining tonight with Cauliflower Alley Club. Appreciate it.
Hey, happy to be here. It's been a great day. DDP, you'll be happy to know it's about 72 degrees and sunny. All the leaves are starting to change colors. It's got that fall smell in the air. It's just about freaking awesome. So I've had a great day, and what a better way to end it than right here with you guys. Awesome.
All right, so tell the story. What's the first time that you guys met? Was it WCW?
No.
No?
It was in the AWA when Paige was a manager, and I was basically doing whatever needed to be done in the office.
Okay. That's interesting. All right. I didn't know that. And then you got
Eddie, you don't research much, do you?
I do. I do. No, I'll tell you what. Here's how much I researched, because I remember reading a book about you that you started off on a correct me if I'm wrong, like an infomercial where you were selling like laser tags. Is that correct?
You know, it's correct enough. We're going to let it slide because it's a boring story. But yeah, you're close.
I thought it was a pretty good story because anyone who's trying to like make it in the business world, coming up with something back then where no one else was doing that, that's pretty good. It's pretty cool.
I was pimping at an early age. I'd sell anything or try.
That's what you got to do. So what? So let's see. Let's try to get some questions there. Somebody wants to know, DDP, how many books do you have? I need to catch up on some reading.
Actually, four. No, three. Positively Page, Yoga for Regular Guys. But the best one is out right now called Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It. And you can get it for like $18 on Amazon Prime.
Okay. And somebody wants says, nice shirt, Eric. Are you still in Wyoming?
I'm still in Wyoming. Can't you tell? Look behind me. Mountains, a little bear up there stuck to the side of the post thingy there. This is like Yellowstone up here where I live. This is all I need is a black hat and a horse. You guys would think you'd be watching Yellowstone.
So do you so you have the show 53 weeks or 83 weeks with Conrad currently, right?
Eddie, you and I are not going to get along. I don't know how long this
show. Oh my God!
But at this rate, you and I are going to be slapping each other before the end.
That's fine. No, that's okay. Like, we can do the fight.
It's called 83 weeks.
See? I said 83 weeks. I said 83 weeks. I was still thinking. Weeks. You know what I'm doing? Right? I'm trying to field questions from Twitter, Facebook, and do this at the same time. I'm trying to pulling the curtain back a little bit here.
All right. I feel it for you. You're a sympathetic baby. I'll lighten up on you. Go ahead.
Here we go. Got to give it to DDP. He got a really late start in wrestling and turned into a pretty big star. Really respect him for standing up to Scott Steiner. That took huge balls.
Actually, Scotty was just – he was just at my house about a month ago, him and his nephew, Bronson Steiner, who is going to be a hell of a talent down the road. He tried out, he lasted to the last cut in with the Ravens, but I think you're going to see him end up in the business at some point. He got a great look and he got Steiner genetics.
Okay. Nice. Let's see. Does somebody wants to know what's Eric's book?
My book? Oh, it's this little ditty called Controversy Creates Cash, New York Times bestseller, but whatever. Yeah. Eddie, when this is over, I feel so bad for you. I want you to give me your address, and I'm going to send you a copy. So the next time
I have the book.
A little bit about me.
I have the book.
Yeah. It's called Controversy Creates Cash. Came out about 2007, I think, or six.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where I read about the infomercial.
Ah, okay.
And it was like, I'm pretty sure that was in the beginning of that book. Because I'll tell you what, you know what I thought was interesting about that is because self-promotion, I was a stand-up comedian at one point in my life for a long time. And you don't have to be funny. You have to promote yourself better than someone else. That's like,
it doesn't surprise me that you don't think you have to be funny, but whatever.
This is great. I love, wow, Eric's playing the heel already.
We got to make it entertaining, right?
No, I agree.
Listen
no,
to me drone on and on and on and on and getting lost in the weeds. The least I could do is fire it up a little bit.
No, I appreciate that. So let me ask you a question. What, when you were at WCW, what made you, what was it that made you guys number one? I want to know, like, what was the secret sauce that you did?
Well, I'm going to interject on that because he won't put himself over in this, but it was that guy right there. Because he would tell me for years, and I mean at least two or three, that we were going to beat the WWF. Like, he was going to knock Vince McMahon out. That was his goal because he's a fighter and he's a visionary. And he saw that in the beginning. And be honest, I didn't see that. I didn't see it. I didn't see it till around 95 when Nitro started and like, wow, we can compete with those guys. We're beating those guys sometimes. But as it kept going and it got to those 83 weeks, there was a lot of work put into that and a lot of belief.
Right. Well, I mean, it was a pretty meteoric rise to the top, right? I mean, did you think, I want to be nice about this, but did you think that there was going to be something where the faster you went to the top, that it wouldn't be sustainable? Or did you think, or no?
Who's that question for?
For Eric, it's for you. I'm curious about that because I feel like that's any industry. The faster you get to the top, you know, maybe it's not as sustainable as somebody, as a company where they take a lot longer to get there.
Yeah, my brain isn't wired quite like that.
Okay, that's fair.
When I see an opportunity or I'm excited about an opportunity, I only see one ending of it, mm-hmm. and that's reaching whatever goal I set for myself.
Yeah.
I don't kind of simultaneously analyze what's going to happen when I get there. And maybe I should have, you know, so I had an idea of something to fall back on. But no, when I see a vision or a goal or something, if I just see something I want, it can be, you know, I was driving down the road with my dog, enjoying this beautiful weather out here in God's country. And I saw this 1955 Chevy pickup. And it caught my eye. I said, I want that pickup. And sure enough, it had a for sale sign on it. Now, how much you want to bet before the end of this year I'm going to have that 55 Chevy pickup? And it was the same thing about WCW and where I thought it could be. I saw something in my head, called a vision, whatever you want to call it. I saw a picture in my head, and it was more like a movie than a picture. I saw it in my head, and then I just figured out how to make it come true or make it a reality.
Yeah.
But I wasn't worried about what was going to happen when I got to the promised land, so to speak.
I have a picture, Eddie. I have a picture, and they're all off the walls right now because I just got done painting. But I have a picture of me and E in front of the Learjet, and about just it's just me and him. And it's kind of like reminding me because we came all the way from the AWA, you know, WCW, and literally as fourth string, you know, announcer and play-by-play guy, and Eric working 90, 100 hours, you know, just trying to, you know, to try to work his way up. And a few years later, I'm on top of the world in wrestling and main events, pay-per-views. He's running the company. It reminded me like in the part of the movie Big, where Tom Hanks and his little buddy who's still 11 are together and they're like, wow, look where we are. Like, oh my God, you run a toy store, you know, this big corporation. E running that and us being there and just living a dream on such a different level, man. It was magic. It was an amazing time.
You know what's interesting, and you know, I'm really grateful for the opportunity to do my wrestling podcast 83 weeks, not 53, 83 weeks with Conrad, because it has forced me, not forced me, but it's a responsibility I have to do that show every week. And I don't want to do a bad show. You know, I want to do everything I can to make it as entertaining as possible, whether it's, you know, beating up on Eddie here or trying to be funny or telling a great story. You know, it's all just entertainment. And in the process of doing these podcasts over the last 2 years, I've had to go back and research, you know, events and research stories and go back and watch shows from 1993 and 1994 to kind of jog my memory and allow me to start thinking about that time frame. Because we've, you know, I've produced over 5,000 hours of wrestling content, and it all kind of just bounces around in my skull. So I got to really do some homework. But in the process of the last 2 years and really looking at my career from a completely different angle now, and my experiences, not so much my career, my experiences and the people that I've worked with, time has got a funny way of messing with your head, I think. Maybe it's as we get older, or at least as you get older, DDP, but I don't know. I'll realize it. But the other day, as an example of how goofy time is on my head, and the example that Paige just gave is a great one. You know, we went from two guys that nobody would give a ride to the hotel after a show, the lowest end of the food chain, bottom of the food chain, so to speak, to, in my case, running the company, and in Paige's case, being a world heavyweight champion or being a main event. That's kind of a big deal over a 10-year period of time. No, wait a minute. It wasn't even that. Yeah, it was about a 10, no, less than that, 8 years.
Right.
Well, that's one, and Paige's story is a great example of that. Another one I had the other day, and this one really, you know, screwed with me, as I was going through social media and somebody posted, they were listening to this great podcast called 83 Weeks, and they were talking about the AWA and one of the last big events they had in the AWA, which was the Team Challenge Series, and it is just mind-numbingly bizarre. You have to go see it. But somebody sent me this poster from, it was a mini AWA event from 1984. And these were people, now this was 3 years before I got into the industry, right? I didn't get into the industry until 87. So this card from 1984 had about, out of the 12 people or so that were on the card, like six of them I was huge fans of, who ended up working for me less than 10 years later. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a trip. When you think about what has happened over the last 20 or 30 years in professional wrestling, not just from my perspective or Paige's perspective, but just look at how much the industry has evolved in so many ways. It's really been a fascinating journey to watch, not just the wrestling, but the business of the business of wrestling.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. All right, let's get some – we got a bunch of questions coming in here. Let's see. Eric, we understand that you're a third-degree black belt. How many karate tournaments did you win, and how many men did you knock out?
I never got past first degree black belt, so I don't know where the third degree came from, but I'll take it. You know, if you're a licensed, credible fourth degree black belt and you want to promote me to third degree black belt, reach out, DM me, whatever. That's how most people get their black belts anyway. No, I never got past first degree. I can't tell you how many tournaments I fought in. I would say probably not 1,000, but more than 500, I guess. How many people I've knocked out? I never knocked out anybody in the ring. I've knocked people out outside of the ring, never in the ring. The worst I think I ever hurt somebody was actually was a friend of mine. His name was Randy Reed. He hates when I tell this story. We stay in touch on Facebook. He freaking hates it. But he was a senior black belt. He had been around a lot longer than I had, and we you know traveled together. And he was from Wisconsin, I was from Minnesota. He had his group of people. I was in mine. Anyway, we became friends. We partied a lot after the tournaments and the fights and so forth. Well, eventually, after I made black belt, he and I met in a tournament down in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And I had a really fast. I'm right-handed, but my left hand hits way harder and way faster for some reason than my right. So I'm a right-handed southpaw. Randy wasn't used to that. He blew across the line. I was scared to death of him because I knew he was better than me. But I blasted him right in the nose with a left hand before he got anything off. And I knew I broke it immediately. There was blood all over the place. They stopped the fight for a few minutes, got his stuffed a bunch of crap up his nose. started the fight over again. And the next move I did, I swept his legs out from underneath him, and he landed on the hardwood floor. And back then they were big in university floors. They were taped up rings. And he landed right on the edge. So I kind of watched him. And as soon as he put his hands down to push himself up, I turned around and stomped on his broken nose. Yeah, I did that. But I never knocked him out.
All right. Hold on. Let's see here. We got
come back, Eddie. God, you're on fire tonight.
I'm trying to get 100 questions in here. Hold on. DDP, I haven't heard a lot of stories of you managing bad company in AWA. What was it like working with those guys?
Oh, they were awesome. They were super talented. Wouldn't you say, E? Those bad company, Pat and Paul, those guys were really talented.
Pat Tanaka, and again, this is one of those things that I was talking about. Time. You know, you go back and watch Pat Tanaka, 1986, 1987, 1988. And some of the things that Pat Tanaka was doing in the ring that nobody else was doing in the ring at that time. And, I mean, Pat Tanaka, I think, was vastly underrated when he was at the peak of his career. I mean, you know, things change for him, as they do for all of us. But there was a point in time when Pat Tanaka was at the peak of his career, he was as innovative in his day as just about – I don't want to compare him to other people today. That's not fair. Everything's changed. But he was as innovative in his time as anybody that you could think of today who would be regarded as very innovative. Pat was really cool. Paul, I didn't know Paul as well. I liked his work. He was more of a rock solid guy. He was versatile. He could do a little bit of both. But of that team, Pat's the guy that I think the most fondly of because I used to hang out with him.
Pat was – and he had his knee like this being his worst foot would be – his knee could go like this. I go, what is that? I don't know how he ever did what he did, as beat up as he was. He would take the fastest flat back bump you go, boom, and he would rock it to that mat. I'm like, dude, I get hitting back and hitting flat, but you got to be hurting yourself. Because he would, like, it was just dynamite fast. I would love the matches that they had with the Rockers, you know, Marty and Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels kind of became somebody pretty big. And the Guerreros, the Guerrero family. There was a lot of really good times. I only worked one day a month. You know, that's all I worked, one day a month. And we'd shoot 4 TVs back then. So, and it was fun. We did it in Vegas, so it was a good time.
That's pretty cool. Let's see. I have a question from Twitter here. With WWE viewing figures in sharp decline, Eric, what would you do to fix their current product?
Oh, I think people, especially wrestling fans who are fixated on numbers and ratings and data that is available out there in the public domain, and then wow, people that are producing newsletters get a hold of it and they start using that as a basis to, you know, support whatever opinions they have du jour, or whatever their agendas may be. And I think, first of all, I don't think we should look at anything over the last 6 months and try to extrapolate any solid information from it. It's just been bizarre. The entire television world is upside down in terms of viewership. Sure, some shows are doing well, some shows are doing even better, but for the most part across the boards, it's pretty upside down world right now on television. So if you throw out the last 6 months and look at WWE and look at their ratings over the last couple of years, is there a decline? Yeah. Is it consistent with the decline in viewership with almost all other shows, entertainment shows on cable and in network? It's probably pretty close. I think if I was analyzing anything, I would take a look at the last 10 years of where WWE's viewers are or where they've been, and then I would factor in the decline in television viewership over that same period of time, and somehow some smart sucker in math would be able to extrapolate a number that probably says something like WWE's numbers against those two data points, that being current viewership and adjusted viewership for streaming compared to the last 10 years, would probably tell you WWE's holding up just fine. And in some cases, probably suffering less than a lot of other cable television entertainment properties, and for significantly less money as well. So I think wrestling in general is still very, very consistent against all forms of televised entertainment. I think WWE may be suffering a little bit because of, in my opinion, it's oversaturation, not just the amount of content that the people get to watch, but the amount of content that the talent, the creative talent and the producing talent have to actually output. And I think the overall product, in my opinion, just my opinion as a viewer and as a fan of WWE and a lot of the people in it, in my opinion, the quality has suffered because the emphasis on storytelling and character development has suffered as a result of just having to produce so much. It's the difference between making one barrel of whiskey at a time and opening up, you know, a whiskey factory. It's just not the same thing. You know, quality can suffer sometimes when you overproduce things. So I think WWE's probably taking a bit of a hit overall, but I think the, you know, people that talk too much about it and write too much about it and they find it on chat boards, it gives them something to talk about. Seeing the data and being able to repeat the data sometimes makes people sound smart, but until you know how to interpret that data and apply it towards a solution, you're just kind of like a really noisy parrot that just repeats shit that they hear and read. I'm sorry, is this like TVMA? Do I have to watch my mouth or anything?
Well, I think people want to try to look for that recreation of the magic from like the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, then you know? You ain't gonna find it. It's not gonna happen. You know, the world is a different world. The conditions in the environment that allowed that to happen, the Monday Night Wars, are so different today that you couldn't create anything even close to it. It's not gonna happen. But
it's kind of like it's kind of
like the WWE Network in 83 weeks, each and every Monday at 6 a.m.
You know, it's kind of like when radio kind of got booted for TV and people stopped listening to radio the way they did. That's what's kind of happening right now. And it's only going to get more different. You know, it's only going to get more different over these next three to 5 years.
Hmm. What do you think happens in the next, I mean, what does wrestling look like in the next 5 to 10 years? Does it exist in 10 years? I mean, what do you think?
You can't kill wrestling. What are you thinking?
I agree. You know, I definitely agree. Look, I look at it differently, though, I guess, maybe than some people do. Maybe not. Why does wrestling work? I mean, if you're going to discuss this theory or premise, why does wrestling even work? Why did wrestling become the most watched television program in syndication before cable television? Why did professional wrestling become the most successful form of entertainment on cable television when cable television started? Oh, and by the way, still today, why is it that wrestling led the way in regularly scheduled pay-per-view business? Why is it that professional wrestling in the digital age is really, in many respects, exampled only by WWE getting into the over OTT business, what, 3 years ago, 5 years ago? WWE is on the cutting edge of digital entertainment, professional wrestling. And AEW is doing the same. So my question is why? And I think it's because it's basic storytelling. It's good versus evil with over-the-top action. That will always be appealing. It translates. Why does wrestling work so well overseas when American comedies and dramas often don't? Because wrestling translates and comedy doesn't. Mm-hmm. Because wrestling translates and sometimes drama doesn't. Some forms of drama. So I think wrestling will always work because it is a basic need of humans in our culture to identify with certain characters and live vicariously through a good versus evil story, depending on how they relate to those characters. And that's a part of human nature. It hasn't changed since cavemen were drawing pictures, right, of buffalo on the inside of a cave wall with a charcoal stick. It's storytelling is always going to be there, and wrestling is the most basic, purest form of a good versus evil story when it's at its best. Sometimes it's not so good, but when it's at its best, it's going to always work. And compared to other forms of television, it's very inexpensive to produce, relatively speaking. Try producing a two-hour sitcom every week for the amount of money WWE is able to produce a two-hour live action show every week. It's for the money and the bang that it brings, it's tough to beat wrestling, and that's why I think you're, in one way, shape, or form, it'll always be around.
That's really impressive. That's probably why you were able to take WCW to number one. Do you have a marketing background?
That's why I have this podcast called 83 Weeks.
Do you have a marketing background? Just out of curiosity.
No, I was born a pimp.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Let's see. We got Eric and DDP. How do you feel about AEW's creative? Will they last with the current booking, or do they need to make a change?
Will they last with current booking? I think they're doing pretty damn good. I was just watching somewhere where, you know, and I love all those kids from NXT, but you know, that's a WWE product, and I just heard last week they beat them again. So I don't know where their booking's lacking. They're growing and they're figuring out stuff as they go along. I think they've done an unbelievable job considering they weren't even on the air 9 months ago. 10 months ago, you know, I mean, it's just all started. I guess it would be 11 months ago, but it started in October. I think they're doing pretty damn good.
No, I think so. I think they are too. Hold on, let's get another.
Can I answer that question? What the hell, Eddie?
Sorry, I know.
What the hell?
I'm trying to get as many questions as we can. And then someone
said, well, you just keep asking questions, and I'll sit here while you ask them. I don't even have to answer them. They didn't get through 100 questions. You just won't get to any answers. Damn. I think their bookie's doing great. I think anybody that's judging AEW right now is an ass. It's a right. young company that's growing quickly and doing a phenomenal job.
I like watching it. DDP, what was it like working with Jay Leno?
You know, Jay's an amazing entertainer, man. It was just a super pleasure to be a part of what, because that's what Eric set the whole thing up with Malone and Rodman and me and Hulk, and to do shoot the whole angle there. So Jay really got into it in the middle when me and Malone squared off with Rodman and Hogan, and it really put us on the map on a different level. And then when Jay came in, you know, was it going to be good wrestling? No, but is it going to be entertaining? Yes, and it was. And I'll tell you what, Jay got down there and worked out and tried to learn what he needed to learn, you know, and everybody was going to go out there and take care of him, you know. So, for a guy who was in his mid-50s and out there moving and shaking, I thought he did pretty good for an entertainer.
Fair enough. Let's see. You guys always had cool ring gear in WCW. Did DDP pay for it, or did Eric and WCW buy the gear for the wrestlers?
No, they did not buy it. But Eric did change my ring gear at one point. One day he called me up, and he was, because he studied everything. He's watching everything. And he goes, you know who you are now? You know who you're becoming? You're the Bruce Springsteen of professional wrestling. You need to be wearing jeans. I was like, oh, my God. I wear these big clunky-ass knee braces. How am I going to find jeans to go over that?
Okay. This is so much fun. Every time I do an interview with somebody like DDP or somebody that I work closely with or close friends with over the years, you know, we each get asked a question, but ironically, we have kind of different perspectives. And I'm not going to tell you which one is absolutely right, because after all these years of me telling my version of the story, perhaps I've convinced myself that I'm absolutely right. So I'm going to start this with that admission. That being said, no, it wasn't because of your knee braces, Paige. It was because of your leopard skin fur coat and your goggles and your boas and your cigar and the bling. And then you got to have a couple girls. Now we got to have a jacked up muscle guard, our bodyguard. We didn't. Oh my God, he was the kaleidoscope of gimmicks. Watching him walk was like being right in the middle of a giant kaleidoscope that you couldn't get out of. Everything was just colorful and moving around, but it didn't mean anything. And I having gotten to know Paige and kind of really know who he is, more so than what he was trying to be, I said, man, just be yourself. Just throw your jeans on. Get rid of the cigar. I want to get rid of that. Get rid of your cigar. Get rid of the bow. My bow. Oh, my God. Get rid of the girls. Get rid of the girls. It was like pulling teeth.
Now, let me interject and admit you're right about that. But at that time, I was wearing the black satin shit. So, but either way, you're right about that. And I will definitely give you props on that. Because when Eric Bischoff forced me for Paige Joseph Falkenberg to stop being this over-the-top wrestling persona of Diamond Dallas Page and force Diamond Dallas Page to start to take on the characteristics of Paige Joseph Falkenberg. That's when my career really started to take off. It was right at the time, Diamond Cutter and everything. It was all like it was supposed to happen like that.
Can you pinpoint...
I'll even remember.
Well, let me finish the question. You're as bad as Eddie, Paige. I'm getting double teamed here. No, Paige, I was going to ask you, do you remember the first night when you went out without, you know, in your new, you know, real guy gimmick, man of the people gimmick, if you will? Do you remember the first night you went out in that and what the reaction was?
I'll tell you what I do remember. I don't remember that, but I do remember when you walked up to me, and I'll never forget it. We were in Atlanta, and I think it was one of the first shows at a Phillips Arena. And you walked up to me, and you said, lose a cigar. It's the last thing I have. It's the last gimmick I have. I go, but, bro, I really smoke these. We smoke them together. He's like, lose a cigar. I threw the cigar down. I literally, when I walked out through Don Kersine, got the biggest reaction I ever got. And then I went out and worked with an enhancement guy who looked like Brody. I can't remember his name, but he had the long hair, big guy, like 300 pounds. And he went to slam me, and I turned into a Diamond Cutter. It was the biggest pop I'd ever heard up till that point. So that's what I took away from lose a cigar, lose all the other stuff. And it all worked. So, you know, I ain't saying you were wrong, bro.
No, that's not my point at all. I was just trying to, because I remember one very specific, I mean, I can literally visualize it in my, I could probably, if I had any talent at all as an artist, I could paint the picture for you. But I'm not sure where we were. It was in a smaller venue. I almost want to say something like Gainesville or Macon or something like that. And this is now you're in your man of the people gimmick. And I had you walk up into the crowd after a match the first time.
Yep.
And I went, that's when I went, bam, over, did it, off he goes. That moment I remember as clear as it happened this morning.
Yeah, dude, I remember doing that because that no one would have done that. And go up there, and the people were going crazy. And I would have so many amazing stories after that, you know, that really, you know, it settled inside me of stuff that I remember. Like feelings like, oh, wow, that was amazing. Like when people said, you miss wrestling. I don't miss wrestling. I had an unbelievable run. I feel really good right now. I want to keep feeling like this. I did miss running out in those people, though, because that was craziness. They were just so pumped up that you were out there with them.
Yeah, and that's, you know, something else, you know, and because when it's happening, I'll speak for myself. When it was happening to me, when I was going on, of course, I was getting different reactions than you were, but still, reactions are reactions. And for me, while it was happening, I didn't think about it. I didn't know how to recognize it. I just was experiencing it in real time. It wasn't like, wow, this is the most exciting thing I've ever done, or more importantly, I didn't take the time to appreciate it. I guess that's what I'm really trying to say, because it came so fast. Seems like it came easy, but it really wasn't. But it came so fast, and when I was in the middle of it, I didn't take time to think about it or appreciate it. And now that I've got nothing but time on my hands, now I look back at it, and I appreciate it more now than I ever did then, if that makes sense. Even though it was fun then, I appreciate it way more now. And it was a great experience, but I think for me, I look at it, what was I appreciate? Why did I appreciate it so much? Sure, I mean, I've got an ego like everybody else, and you know, you're out there working and you like people to put your work over however they do it. But for me, I think it's just the energy, and I think that's what we end up missing. Do I miss the wrestling business? Pieces of it, parts of it, overall? No. But I miss the energy that came along with certain aspects of the business. I miss, you know, some of the creative side. I miss directing talent a little bit. I miss that opportunity to have to be forced to sit in a room and go, okay, we got to come up with something really good. What's that? I love that process of what if, because you never know what's you're gonna get at the end of that little mental journey. You know, if you go down that rabbit hole, you allow yourself, and you want to go down that rabbit hole. You're never sure what you're gonna find if you started out by saying, "What if we do this?" Most of the time, it's probably the shits, but every once in a while, it turns out to be something magic, and the magic is what's worth living for.
We got the Bushwhackers who just joined us. All right.
Luke.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Luke.
Hey, how you doing, hey, Mark? Hey, DDP. Hey,
all right, Eric and DDP. We'll let you guys get out of here. But, hey, before you guys go, where can people find you?
Who are you letting go?
Twitter, @RealDDP, and @DiamondDallasPage on Instagram. EB, great time, brother. Hey, thanks for the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks, Dallas.
See you. All right, guys. Eddie, thank you very much, especially if you let me bust your balls. That's always a good time.
No, Eric, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I'll be writing one-liners about you on Twitter.
All right. You can find me at Bischoff. See you guys later. Luke, Butch, have a great time. Love you guys.
Take care. Great one.